Okay, so my phone says it's time to start, so thank you for being here. I'm Lee Bortons, and if you don't mind, I'd like to open up in a word of prayer. Dear Lord, thank you that you are the author of all creation. You're the author of any goodness that's in our hearts. And Holy Spirit, we just welcome you and ask you to take what the Lord has given us. Help us to see that it's good and use it to know you better and to make you known, so that as we lift you up, your son Jesus will be recognized. In your name I pray, amen. All right, thank you. So I'm Lee Bortons, I'm the founder of Classical Conversations. You don't have to be in Classical Conversations to get something from my seminars, I hope, because we're always just talking about good pedagogy and parent responsibility and the classical arts. So we're happy to have any of you join CC that aren't, and maybe what we could do is, folks in here who are helping to run the conference for me, maybe raise your hands in case somebody wants to talk to you afterwards. So you can always go to the CC booth. What number is it? Five something. Yeah, it's on the end cap. Mm-hmm. That's why it's hard to describe. Anyway, so we're happy to speak with you longer there. Something else I want to promote, well, everyone's settling in, is if you don't know a lot about Classical Conversations, we do have the website, classicalconversations.com, and I encourage people to click the join button that's on there and put in your zip code, and you'll be able to find where there are real life people, not online people, real life people who will meet with you and help you to understand what classical Christian education is, whether you homeschool with us or not. The main thing for me is that you homeschool. That's what I really love promoting, and that you do it for the Lord's sake. And then if we can be of help, that is just an extra blessing to me. So thank you for being here. So I'm going to present you with a thesis. If you're in Classical Conversations, Challenge 3 or 4, that's kind of a familiar idea, where we talk about just a statement, and then we have some conversations around it. This is Classical Conversations, and this is a workshop. So like I said yesterday, I hope you'll do some work, and I hope you'll participate in some conversations with us. So here's my thesis. Family is the locus of education. Creation is the curriculum. Family is the locus of education. Creation is the curriculum. Does everyone know what locus means? It's a math term to just say location. But it means more than that. It means where a lot of things converge. So it's not just a location, but it's a location that represents a quality of distance as well as convergence of ideas. So family is the locus of education. Do you think the world thinks that? Or you may be homeschooling because you'd like to hang out with people who do think that. So that's my first part of the thesis. So creation is the curriculum. Does anybody know the roots of the word curriculum? What does it mean? The course, the path? Mm-hmm. It's the course to run. So when you have a curriculum, it's the course to run. And the New Testament's really clear about there's a race marked out for us, and we want to be prepared to finish it. Doesn't say how much time it's going to take, but we want to prepare ourselves to finish it. So does this free you up or make you nervous if I say creation is the curriculum? Mostly free, but both. Do you want to explain? Creation seems wide open. I'm just so they can hear. Keep going.
So that is free. Mm-hmm. But the responsibility to manage the wide open is what comes.
Yeah. So the wide open is a lot, all of creation. It's a lot of things. So what can I take in? So we as classicalists, if you understand grammar, we would say that a good place to begin is the vocabulary of science and creation. And science, who knows what science means from the Latin root? To know. That's all it means, to know. So modernity has defined a lot of terms differently than the Bible defines it. And that's one of the things we're going to be discussing, hopefully, today for this next hour. So let me talk first, before we jump into science, let me just review what exactly the classical arts are, so then we can talk about how they relate to science, and then maybe we'll have some practical ideas of how you can make your science curriculum more about creation, more about the both natural bents and the Holy Spirit's help as we raise these things called children. That can be really difficult sometimes, but it doesn't need to be all the time, does it? In fact, it's a real blessing. Okay, so classical conversations, and a lot of the folks out there in the book hall who promote classical education talk about three words a lot: grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric. Does anybody want to tell me what they think grammar means in the classical context? The basics. Good. So as a classicalist, one of the first things you do is define your terms. So I'm trying to see, what does my audience know? So anybody else besides the basics? What's grammar? Yes? What you memorize. Wonderful. What else? Vocabulary. Facts. What do you want to say? Terms and definitions. Naming. Good. Okay, then the next thing we like to talk about is either dialectic or logic, depending who you're with. Yeah, the terms are used interchangeable. So what do you think of, for those of you that are in classical education, what's the dialectic or what's the logic? What are we trying to do? Asking questions. Good questions. What do I do with what I know now, have now, whatever verb you want to stick in there? Okay, I'm liking this. You guys know what you're doing. Okay, so then we use the word rhetoric, and we don't mean what NBC means when they say, well, that's just rhetoric. We mean something very holistic and ancient. What do we mean by the word rhetoric? Go ahead.
Supporting, defending,
recalling, teaching, convincing. Good. Good. So something that I like to do is come up with different ways that we can hang our hats on these words that are unfamiliar to the rest of the world. And so this is an old one. If you've been listening to me for a while, you'll have heard this before, but not everyone has, so I want to share it. So one of the things we do as classical Christian educators is we should be the happiest, most joyful people on the face of the earth, because we know who our hope is, and we know that he's here to provide for us, and that it's going to all be okay no matter what the crisis is. So I tell people that now that I'm done homeschooling and our four sons are in their late 20s, early 30s, almost 40, they ask me, what do I miss the most? And I always say, the comedy show. I don't understand why parents don't want to raise children they enjoy being with. They're so funny. Why would you want to farm them out to somebody else? Raise them in such a way that you enjoy being with them, right? So I missed the comedy show. So telling jokes is an important part of classical education, because it shows what grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric really is, and why all of us do it, and there's nothing elitist about it. It's the way we were designed to learn. So, this is my joke. What do John the Baptist and Winnie the Pooh have in common? Now, a lot of people say, honey, but that means they didn't listen, because I said this was a joke, and honey isn't a funny answer. All right, so you need to know what my words mean. That's grammar, okay? So let me do it again. What do John the Baptist and Winnie the Pooh have in common? The same middle name. You gotta wait a little bit. It's after lunch. Okay, so what's the grammar, the dialectic, and rhetoric of what we just did? So the grammar is, if I had said this to a culture that didn't know John the Baptist or Winnie the Pooh or English, they can't even approach it. They don't know the words, right? And then when I said the same middle name, I could see on your faces, what were you doing? Connecting, thinking, right? Recalling, comparing. Okay, that's the dialectic. Then what was the rhetoric? How did I know when you understood the information we were sharing? You laughed. Do all of us do that all the time? We have our senses available to us, and every person on this earth, no matter how damaged their body is, has some sort of sensory perception. That's what the Lord gave every one of us. That's how you learn grammar. He gave every one of us a brain to learn to think. That's dialectic. And then he gave every one of us a body so we can go forth and share the knowledge of him with others, whether it's physically or academically, with words, or maybe just a smile or a laugh. So all we're trying to tell parents in classical conversations is whether it's a difficult science subject or possibly Latin that you don't like, or even something really fun like an amazing piece of literature you just read aloud with your family. Three things are always happening. Ideas are coming into that body. That person is thinking, processing, trying to own it, not paying attention, whatever they choose. And this is why education can never be done to somebody. They have to want to participate in it, because not a one of us can go inside their brain and make them pay attention. And then all of us, once we have these ideas, we can think, oh, I'd like to do something with that. And then that's the rhetoric. So a more concrete idea, an abstraction, which I enjoy because I don't know anything about it, and here I can teach on it. I don't have to know anything about it. I know grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric. That's all I need to know to be welcome into any form of human endeavor. So let's talk about welding. Never welded once in my life. Do you think there's a grammar to welding? Welders talk to one another, right? They have materials and fires and temperatures and tools. Okay, do you think welders think about things?
Yes.
They better. They may burn their hand, right? Stub their finger, or make something that's not going to come out the way they want it to come out. And then what's the rhetoric of a welder? Doing the job? A solid weld? Something that holds and lasts? A customer that's happy? Right? So there's all kinds of ways that we have rhetoric. So the thing is, we can also apply it to academics. And that's what the majority of people out in the hall are talking to you about, is how do you, as homeschooling folks who are educating for lifelong learning, not for 12 years, but forever. And I said, my oldest is almost 40, and he still calls me, and we still talk, and we still teach one another, now that he's a brother rather than a son of mine, right? So it goes on forever. So academically, it's things like, okay, I don't like Latin. I actually love Latin. I'm being facetious here. So I don't like Latin, but I know that I need to get this done, whatever this done is. And so I know that the first thing I need to do is figure out, okay, how do people in Latin talk? What are their words? What do they care about? What are the ideas that they have? What are the facts I can memorize? How can I enter into their conversations? So that's what you do if you want to be a doctor. That's what you do if you want to be a lawyer. It doesn't matter what it is. So that's why we do things with chants and flashcards and memory work and writing things over and over again and just various things. Oh, is my sound not good? Oh, okay. So that's what we do with academics. Then we have long conversations and questions and just opportunities to push and pull against each other, because that's what you have to do to make knowledge your own. You have to explore it from many different directions. And it takes repetition, it takes duration, and sometimes it takes pleasure and pain. Right? Aren't there things you didn't purposely try to memorize, but you will always remember because they were so fun or because it hurt? Right? That's just how the brain works, everybody's brain. So children who maybe aren't so good at memorization, or even adults, it's because everyone's not the same, but they still can memorize. Otherwise, they couldn't speak their language. We know everyone can do it. Right? So we all have different giftings in this. Some people are really good at asking questions and trying to explore and be curious. Other people are like, you know, let the experts help me. I have other things to do. Right? But you're all thinking, whichever decision you make there. And then academically, you know, you guys as parents, you see the rhetoric all the time, right? We call them aha moments, or their eyes light up, or your child goes, I get it, right? Now, one of the favorite ways modernity has killed that enthusiasm is requiring a test or an assessment from somebody else, rather than teaching the child themselves to do it for the pleasure of the Lord, and even if it's just their own pleasure. So one thing that's really important in Christian education, not necessarily in specifically classical education, is that you become really good at self-assessment. And who do we measure ourselves against? The Lord, who said, be ye perfect as I am perfect. And that is a light yoke to bear, Because how long do you have for that? Eternity. And until you are perfect, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, right? The Lord is the perfect one, and that's why he's our salvation and our ticket into heaven. So all these things tie together. So that, in a nutshell, is what classical education is when you're talking about the trivium, grammar, dialectic, rhetoric. And what I tell folks is, in classical conversations, we're trying to help our families learn how to name like Adam, ask questions like Jesus, and persuade like Paul. I think every parent who loves the Lord wants their child to do those three things. But we fall into this trap of saying, but the education I know said you need to have this many science credits, this ability to read these kind of books, right? All these other things, which are so important. But the scriptures tell us what? Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all those other things will be added unto you. So what I just gave you with the naming, you know, Adam named the animals, that relates to science, right? And in our limited definition of science from the modern perspective, Jesus asked so many good questions that even the adults were astounded. And that's what we love about homeschooling kids, is our neighbors say, how come your kids are so interesting? And I say, you know what, they're not interesting, they're interested. Get the right ending on there. And then we want them to go forth always ready for an answer, and more importantly, able to say, you know, I don't know the answer, but could you hold off and I'll come back and I'll go research it and see if we can have a conversation. This is what is an educated human being to those of us that lead classical conversations. You don't need a degree to do any of this. You don't need a specific book to do any of this except for the Bible. You don't need specific teachers, masters. Some people don't even need parents to do that. They're just born curious. But the Lord's so good because he gave us the family to help seat us, which is another definition of locus. Where do we sit? Where is that kind of centering for us? So that when we go, I have a question and I don't know how to answer it, there's an adult in the room who says, me neither, but let's go find out. So for me, that's the definition of a scientist. It's got nothing to do with the textbook, which teaches you to look down. I love textbooks, don't get me wrong. But they're a tool, not the tool, of K-12 science education, right? Because I don't want my kids always looking down. What do I want them to do the most? I actually mostly want them to look up. But I also like it when they have situational awareness and look around, because that way they'll know who to serve and how to serve and get better and better at that. Because all of you are biological creatures that live in an astronomical planet called Earth. So when they are studying you and serving you, and we do this for one another, we're scientists. Does that make sense? Am I being too loose with the terms? I'm trying to tell you where they come from and what the definitions are, because you can't go through a paradigm and break it. There's all kinds of research and studies, and just common sense tells you that. The way you have to break an idea that's grabbed a hold of a culture is to go around it. And the Lord, of course, in Matthew told us our entire job is to turn the world upside down, to not try to see it like they see it, and do not conform. Right? Who do we conform to is his thoughts, which I don't know his thoughts. So every day I got to get up and say, okay, what are your thoughts? I'm going to see what I can pursue today. So, and having that modeled for your children can really help you to expand their ability to be explorers and curious. My favorite verse is Proverbs 25:2. The glory of God is to conceal a matter, but the honor of kings is to search it out. And as the bride of Christ with royalty I'm raising, I get to be the queen mom. And every day we get to say, show us where you are. So one of the things that manifested with that is my kids just have this expectation of how I'm going to deal with creation. And they didn't always like it. They're kids. They don't have the experience, the understanding. They don't always know why we're doing what we're doing. But the one thing I wanted them to always know was that I had infectious enthusiasm about the things the Lord makes and does and talks about. Because now as adults, they share that same infectious enthusiasm. Yes, many times they were not enthusiastic when they were in the home and having to do things they did not want to do. But that's okay, because that's what being adult is, and also that's what being a Christian is. We'll talk about our children's passions without really recognizing that passion is, the root for passion in Latin is the same as for suffering. So when we say our children are passionate about, you know, science or math or motorcycles or what's that new book out there? Everybody's reading Ember Green's book, Green Ember. What they're really saying, what you're saying when you describe it, is you're saying they enjoy that so much they will sacrifice other things to spend time with it. That's what a passion is. Okay, and that's why it's the passion of Christ. And praise God, tomorrow's Palm Sunday. And next week's Easter Sunday. And for those of you that are Orthodox, I know the next week is Easter Sunday for you. So this is a really good time to talk about bunnies. And I think that's why they're making so many great sales. You're looking at me funny, Charity. Yeah, you haven't read it yet. I haven't either, but I bought it today. I bought four books. I will. I'll get there. Good testimony. Good testimony. Good homeschooling. Okay, so with all those preliminaries, let's talk more about actually helping our children in science. First, remembering that they're children. Sometimes that's hard, right? We want to impose our adult ideas on them, forgetting that they don't have the experience and the time doing things that we've done. And so that all by itself is, you know, remembering that, like, I would look at my kids and say, could you please have a 40-year-old head today? Mom just doesn't have the time, right? But so, saying things like that, though, would help me remember I am asking too much. I am not serving them appropriately. So finding any kind of tips or tricks for yourself to help remember that they are children, that they will one day be your brothers and sisters in Christ, that should be your number one priority. And then that means you have forever to learn together. Takes all the pressure off. There's nobody from the state that comes and spanks you when your child's 18 if you failed them. They don't care, right? But we care, so we're here, you know, to help you to do that. Okay, so because they're children, the one thing that's really important is to give them limiting forms that they can be successful at. Why do I start with limiting forms? Well, Genesis starts with forms. The world was formless, and then God formed it. So here's the thing. If you know forms, you can pour any kind of content you want into it. All right, so let me give you some examples that we use in classical conversations, and I will relate this to science studies. So, communication, grammar, that thinking is really important in the younger years because it is what the children can be successful at. But what we're trying to do as they hit that 12, 13, 14 and move on and become much more dialectic in their ability and their world's expanded and they have questions is to teach them very specific rhetorical forms. So for example, we have what we call Annie charts, affirmative, negative, interesting. And you can do that with a three-year-old, with a third grader, with a 13-year-old. We just take an idea and you do pros and cons, right? So we do a lot of that. We also then have what we call mock trial, where in a team of a few students, 4 to 8 normally, they are given the very same information a judge in a courtroom would get over a trial. And they're not allowed to go research and do anything more. They have to take that information only and as a team research it and figure out how to put together a prosecuting team and a defense team and then perform that in front of a judge at a courthouse. So nobody's on their own. Nobody has to go do research. They have to work together basically to write their own little play is what it turns out to be. It's very hard. But that's okay. That age group needs hard things to do because they're not working, they're not married, they're not serving the church the same number of hours as an older student can. They got the time to do something like that. So it's age appropriate, even though sometimes it feels like a big struggle to them. Then after that, we also work on what we call policy debates, where now we say, all right, this is your form. There's back to that idea with mock trial. There's rules to winning or losing. There's things you can't say, you know, hearsay and those kind of things. So they learn those rules. Then we move on to public policy debate, where now there's not four to eight of you, there's two of you. So, and we give you the thesis, the question, but no research. You've got to go do your own research this time and still put on a performance with the two of you against two others. So you don't know what the other two are going to do. And sometimes they come in and they don't even know what their own partner is going to do, right? Because they're still children. They're in about 14, 15 years old. But the forum has really specific rules. And once again, it lasts less than an hour. It's manageable. And they can say, great, that's over with. Or they can hear, well done. It doesn't matter. But they're going to practice that forum repeatedly in classical conversations till they get good at it. Then we do things like, and I'll go faster now, things like forensic events where it's maybe one-on-one or you're doing some sort of singular presentation to an audience. We do things called Socratic circles where you learn to take notes and to listen and to not interject till the conversation is totally over. So you have to learn patience and to wait and note-taking. We do things like senior thesis, which is what I'm actually presenting to you now. It's kind of a senior thesis around the idea that creation is the curriculum and the focus is the family is the locus of education. All these forms are done in a specific amount of time, not really long. They're given plenty of time to do what they need to do to prepare. And they know when it's over, like they all high-five each other because they know they did something extraordinary. And our senior theses are run very much like a PhD. When they ask questions, what's that called? Dissertation, when your dissertation's being looked at by peers, right? Because when they give the thesis in classical conversations, they have to invite guests to be the judge. And the point of it is the judges ask them questions. They push back on their thesis, not the child, on the thesis. They challenge it, they ask questions, and they do it in front of an audience, normally about as big as this. Quite a bit of pressure for an 18-year-old. But if they've been practicing these forms the whole way through, they may not like it, they may not be used to it even, but they know I can do it, right? And that they're children, so just knowing I can is really important, because what's one of the things that probably frustrates a lot of you with adults is they say, oh, I can't do that. We say, no, you knock out that T. We're here to help you. No can't, won't, shouldn't, didn't. All right, so I gave a much longer seminar on those limited ways that we do some things in classical conversations, and those are mostly in our literature and our debate strands, what I just said. When I was done, this couple came up to me and said, we came up here to, we're in classical conversations, we came to complain to you because your science curriculum is not rigorous enough. We are both scientists, and now we've come forward to apologize. And that happens to me a lot, actually. And so I said, okay, tell me. And they said, well, you know, we just looked at the state order of the curriculum. We looked at, you know, can they get through the biology textbook? Where are the tests? What kind of labs are you doing? And now we as scientists listen to what you just said about these other forms that are in other strands, and we recognize that they're exactly what we do as scientists. Every idea we encounter, we have to do pros and cons. We have to set them up in trials. We have to debate them among our peers. We have to write abstracts and thesis papers. All right? Did you see the revelation they had? That the content wasn't what mattered. It was the form that mattered. And if you can recognize the forms as an adult, your children will not do that, but as an adult, then you can go, I can do this, because all it is new content to put in the forms I've been practicing. And as long as you can read and be a little bit syntopic and analytical, in other words, look at two or three resources and combine those ideas together, you really find out you're not excluded from anything that you would ever want to study. Okay, so I'm going to take a breath here for a minute and ask you, before we go into what we can do as families to maybe have this kind of approach with our science curriculum, do you have questions, comments?
When you asked if you were using the forms too loosely, like you were asking us, I was going to say, I don't think you are. I like the simplicity of it because that could be complicated. So, because and that's what makes us scared.
Yeah. So she was saying she liked how I used the terms because it simplified it. Right, Einstein, I mean, just being Einstein. Einstein said, you don't know something if you can't teach it to a third grader. Right? So I'm not cutting any of you down or myself down or anything else. I just always am trying to figure out, Lord, teach me. I'm your third grader, so I have better words to help other people. Because in average, the not you guys in this room, but across the United States, third grade reading level is about where we are at this point in time. Okay. So it was a good thing he told me that 40 years ago, because I've been practicing third grade level for a really long time. Are there any ideas or words you want to add to? Does anybody want to say anything, like burning question? Yes, sir. Well, the short answer is study. So the second answer, though, I would say is to address your audience and not the person you're competing against. Really think about what do they, from a third grade level, what would you share with them? And then you'll be able to win. Does that help or not? Okay, Ray? Well, they're going everywhere. Yes, they go everywhere, Ray, and there's universities everywhere trying to get our children, both conservative, Christian, and state schools. And for a really long time, so the short answer is it's all over the board, and we're seeing children being lost also, right, that we thought really had grounded them, and then they go, and it's really hard when you're 19 to not be cynical when you start meeting other people who are super kind and have ideas that totally go against the Christian faith. How could that be wrong? We see that also. We also see the longer we've been around, more and more students who enter our curriculum around the challenge years, which means they've had oftentimes 7 or 8 years of indoctrination, and they're now bringing it into our communities. And so we're working on helping our directors and tutors combat that. So here's the thing. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better, what you're asking about. But I have never thought that Classical Conversations was elitist. I always thought that it would be wonderful if Classical Conversations could be the Christian educational hospital to the world. Right? If we are the light of the world, we should be surrounded by bugs. We should have problems. And that's not normally why people want to join Classical Conversations. And that's okay that's not why they want to join us. That's why our leadership team, it's so rigorous, the expectations of who they are. You guys have probably heard controversy and complaints, why can't I direct? Because we have a longer vision than getting your child through the age of 13. All right? So I lose money because of those rules we have, because I won't compromise. I would rather be this is just an analogy, I would rather be the pastor of a solid group of elders when culture's in crisis and I lost congregants than to have strong congregants and when the crisis is over, they all left because my elders were weak. Does that make sense? So that's a longer answer, Ray, to what you're asking, but I have no expectations of everyone in this program getting certain degrees, going to certain schools, and be able to do certain things. I'm pretty sure if there's 350 million Americans, there's 350 million answers to what we should be looking for. Yeah, keep going, Ray. A lawyer or engineer or something. Yeah, they're all over the place. I mean, the one thing I have is feedback. Like, I can give you our ACT and SAT scores. They don't matter to me. They're off the charts for our students. The other thing that's more important to a lot of parents is all the scholarships offered around the United States for Classical Conversation students only, right? People want our kids. But the number one reason is all an adult has to do is meet one of your all's kids. And these are homeschoolers in general, too. And they like, this kid looks me in the eye and shakes my hand. I can train them to do anything, right? They know how to pay attention. That's the feedback we get that is consistent. That is never, I never hear the other way around. So they may say they were weak in math, or they might say they really never wrote well, but they don't say they can't try, they can't succeed. Right? Okay, so good questions. All right, so I'm going to give you 5 words as a suggestion to how to consider your at-home studies of science. If you're at all familiar with our essentials curriculum, you'll know we have tasks. Think of these as tasks if you know what that means. Otherwise, don't worry about it. They're just 5 ideas. So this is what I think is important to do as a family and with our children individually to help them have situational awareness and be able to see what's in front of them as well as work and things that are in front of them too. So 1, can they gather? Gather. So there an echo? Can they gather books, movies, publications? Right? Can they go find resources? They don't say, I don't know how to do this. They go, I'm going to go find out how to do this. Right? Can they gather? The second one is, can they collaborate? It's not always a medium that it educates you. It's a nice one, usually cheaper and easier to use than a handful of people. But collaboration is super important among scientists. And that's why we meet one day a week in community, but we don't meet 5 days a week for the whole year because we want you to collaborate as a family more than we want you to collaborate with us. But the collaboration is important. So most people, when they talk about science and what we're doing in the curriculum, they don't ever come up to me and say, how can I engage the local science center curator? How can I get my children to be members of the National Association of Biologists? How can I get my children's thesis paper published in the World Association of Mathematics Journal? Right? We don't look up very high. And we've been trained that way. I think Thoreau was wrong when he said, the mass of men lead quiet lives of desperation. He should have said, the mass of men are led to quiet lives of desperation. And what we're trying to do is lead them to curious lives of inspiration. Because we love the Lord. It takes no more reason than that to want a life like this. So our senses have been dulled, but we're going to undull them. We're going to help them be curious. So we're showing them how to gather materials, how to collaborate with people. Then most folks, rightly so, think science should be experiential. There should be demonstrations, labs, cooking, cleaning, finding out from field trips how the local sewer system works. Right? I live in near Fayetteville, which is a big army base, and we have a lot of prosthetic companies where they're building artificial limbs, and there's a lot of children who are interested in that because their dads came back with a limb missing. Very practical science, very mission-minded science. Not just, I dissected a frog, but here, don't hear me wrong, I think it's really important to dissect a frog. I'd rather they dissected a frog and then a bird and then a pig, and prefer they did a human. Right? But, some of you in this room might be old enough. I can remember my mother and my husband's mother doing their own stitches when the kids were injured. Right? Because that's what you did. Why would you pay for a doctor to do something a seamstress could do? Right? You think that's horrible today, right? But who knew their body better? Right? Who said, nothing scares me? So experience, experimental, demonstration. So this is why it's really wonderful to have your children run Hot Wheels down the slide and tell them, hey, let's time it. Go out there and time those Hot Wheels with those kids. You're teaching them to be a scientist. Okay, so then those are something everybody can do, any age group, even little toddlers. But the next one, analysis, is when it gets a little harder. That's when you want your spreadsheets organized. That's where you want to know how does math relate to this. This is when you want to know what's the history of what I've been researching. Is there a better question I could have asked? Did my hypothesis fail? Right? So analysis. And then after you're all done, the one thing every scientist has to do is record. They don't get paid if they don't record what in the world they did. So, of course, through classical conversations, we have children doing labs and lab reports and writing abstracts and reading textbooks and taking tests and building vocabulary lists, all the things that would go under any of these five ideas from an academic perspective. But what we want to do is free parents up to go home and know that they're both competent and confident to engage creation as their curriculum. Because you'll look at what it is you naturally do and say, I can be analogous. I'm going to do that on the things I don't naturally do. And what you'll find over time is that grammar, when it feels hard, is really because it's unfamiliar. So we've got to stop saying something's easy or hard to our children, because when it's not one or the other to them, they think we don't know what we're saying. Right? And so everything they do, if it's familiar and they've repeated it and they've done it a lot, it's familiar to them. Our job is not as to say, well done. So guess what? The sun's coming up again tomorrow. And there's something new to add so that you can hear well done again. And this does not end ever. And one of the things I've noticed over my 40 years of homeschooling is that something happens to parents around 4 or 5 years old where they are amazing parents. They've taught these children to talk and to walk and sometimes tie their shoes and they lock the doors and they know to go to bed on time and they don't always hit their brother. They can build things with Legos. You know, they can go outside and talk about the birds and all the various things. And then they hit school age and all of a sudden the parents are like, oh, I can't do anymore. They don't recognize just the intrinsic beauty and the difficulty of what they have been through. And what's really sad is for most of us, it actually gets easier, right? Those baby years are the hardest, they're the worst. You gotta carry them and talk to them and do everything else for them. Now they can at least make their own peanut butter sandwich, lock the door and put themselves in the bathtub, right? Because there's new problems coming that have to do with wisdom, right? So we need to encourage parents who don't think they can homeschool or don't think they could be responsible that we are not ever bringing school home. We have to stop doing that. We say homeschool, but we mean school at home. And the longer you're in homeschooling, the more you realize, oh, the world thinks I'm bringing this home just like they do at the school system, and they don't know that I do it totally differently. Things like I've had, particularly it's always interesting when it's a grandfather who says to me, I really wish my daughter would homeschool our 4 grandchildren, but how does she have 24 hours a day to do that? Because there's 4 kids times 6 subjects. I've heard that repeatedly, some form of that from older men. And what are they doing? They're bringing school home. They don't understand that homeschooling is much more efficient than that, that the family can work together all the time. So let me give you maybe a better definition, and then I'll take some questions. Have any of you read Anthony Esselin's book, Out of the Ashes? Yep. And then we carry his book called 10 Ways to Destroy the Imagination of Your Child. So probably more of you have read that. He's the C.S. Lewis of today. He sees Christ in everything. And he, as a homeschooling father, wants all of us to see how we can be made in God's image and pass that on to our children. And what he ends Out of the Ashes with is a really great solution to all the crises that occur. And it's this. I don't know if my 4 sons will raise their children in peacetime or wartime. I don't know if they'll be impoverished or wealthy. I don't know if their wives will be helpful or hurtful. Now, when you're raising your children, you don't know any of these things. But the one who does is the Lord. He knows what's coming, so you have to start depending on him as soon as that baby is born with this idea of I want them to be able to serve you no matter what their circumstances are. So the way Anthony says to do that is you and your spouse go about building your marriage, building your family, building your home, building your business, building your community, building your church, building your government, with your children around your feet, and let them see what you do. And you can do that no matter how smart you are or how rich you are. So with that, I'm done. And I really wanted to give you some time for questions because I know I probably didn't address your real questions that you had when you came in. So thanks. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question.
So a lot of us are big families.
Yep.
I have a child in town.
Can you hear her? Big family?
Big family.
I'll repeat it. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And then when we have that many kids of talent, sometimes you don't know how to do that thing.
Yeah.
For me, last year was two tables.
Yeah.
And I didn't have time. I had a ton of time. Did not have time to sit down and learn two tables. So a lot of times the parents come into us saying, you don't have time to learn the thing to teach them. So how do you help that?
So you say that's great because failure is what makes you call on the Holy Spirit, not your tutor or the textbook. First, let's get our attitudes right about what we're doing, right? And then the second one is to say, this is a practical one. I'll give some spiritual and some practical. The practical one is homeschooling parents in classical conversations who are in that situation you just described of having so many kids and so many things to attend to, is to get a pack of yellow sticky notes. That's the reason your students are coming one day a week to work with the rest of the seminar, and a lot of them are too immature or don't pay enough situational, have enough situational attention to say, hey, tutor, this is my question that mom doesn't seem to get and I don't seem to get, right? But they show up and the tutor leads, which is fine, but most of them would rather engage and hear what their questions are and help them to do that. But you guys are kind of nodding. That was my experience, that very rarely did the students even know what their questions were, right? So does that help on a practical side? Yeah, so figuring out what that can't is and how to help them is, I would say, the other job with the tutor. And, of course, if you see it, you might be able to help, but sometimes you don't understand why the child might be struggling. And we're not to take over the parent's role, but we're there to be the friend of both them and the child and say, hey, did you try it this way? And so I have found, in general, you're saying they're dropping out. It's the parents who quit before the children quit. Right, we have raised a bunch of quitters because we are that way. So if you can encourage them that, look, your child may not love the poetry seminar, but are they ever going to study Christian poetry anywhere else? Probably not. So at least have them show up for that hour so they get some Christian poetry in them. They get some Latin declensions in them. They get some of whatever it is. Right, so because why do they think they're failing? So let's maybe identify that better. If they think they're failing because their child can't do the work, whatever that can't means to them, I would say that we need to help them more lovingly know that it's okay and it'll take a long time for some of us to do some things than others. The one thing every parent, though, can help their child do is recognize that the curriculum is not about you or me. It's about the body of Christ. And the minimum you need to do, this is one of your sanctification processes, the minimum you need to do, child, is enough to engage with the students who enjoy the curriculum. And there's not a single student that loves every bit of it every week. They all have their goods and their bads with it. So, that's really different than the philosophy homeschoolers have had that it's all about my child. And I say this so many times, did I already say it today? That's why we meet for only half the year. Because for half the year, we're trying to help our children learn how to serve the body of Christ through loving the Lord with their minds. Because the other half of the year, they do need phonics or math help or remedial reading, or they need to go work, or they need to have, you know, I'm sure special needs or physical therapy. They also need time for delight-directed stuff, where I just have a good day because I did what I wanted to do and I had fun doing what I wanted to do. So this is why, you know, some people have asked me why we don't go longer in the year, and, like, you know, why don't we spread out the semesters? And I'm like, no, you are robbing your child of the delight-directed education that they need too. So people aren't real good at balancing the two of them and knowing, you know what, let's do enough each week and say Latin so that you can do some flashcards and, you know some words, and the students around you will say, okay, this child's trying, rather than just saying I quit, because that's not the culture we want to be inculcating, is it? So helping them see you need to do enough so the community does well. Then the second thing is, then you need to do enough in the sense of what your child can do that makes it so that they progress. But we've had weeks like everybody else where we traveled or, you know, baby was born or the dishwasher broke or whatever the thing was. And my kids didn't get stuff done that they needed to get done for challenge. But they knew the next week we were, that this was not something that was going to come and go, that we were committed to learning about Christian education with other Christians. But if your attitude is, well, I can't do this because it's not enough, my child just can't get that credit, it's just a different philosophy than what we're trying to do as Christians. So we do all fail every single day. The only person who ever could say, well, let me back up. So a lot of parents will say, like, you know, did you finish this? Right, I said it. Well, the only person who said, who could ever say it is finished and tell the truth was Jesus Christ. We shouldn't be saying those kind of words to our children. We should be saying, well done, right? The words that he's going to say. All the rest of us, we're just practicing for the Bema seat. And we're in that good heaven, and the Lord sits us there, and he's not going to say, Lee, what did you do for charity's children? He's going to say, Lee, what did you do with the four I gave you? Right? And then maybe if I have those additional resources available, he's going to go, okay, and the next, what did you do with charity's children? Right? I'm not off the hook for them either. That's my friend over here. And so just having that eternal aspect in mind is really difficult when we live in time. And this is why science should help us, I think, to go to bed every night repenting. It's dark, isn't it? That reflects the darkness in our heart. That darkness means, oh yeah, I screwed up. I didn't do what I should have done. But what happens every morning? The sun comes up and his mercies are new. And you get to try all over again. So that's why helping them see that just a little bit a day, another way of thinking of it, as I say, they need to do at least what a farmer, at least what a dairy farmer does, and milk the cow. Spend a few minutes every day making sure they're not screaming because they're uncomfortable because nobody milked them. And you'll be amazed over a lifetime how much gets accomplished. But we have this mentality that we got 8-9 months to do it, and then the next thing's coming. And CC does do that in some sense because of the way our blocks are shown on page 40 in our catalog and the various courses. But what people ignore is that there's a blue bar across the top. The blue bar, it tells you which of the 6 skills you're working on for 12 years. But people tend to go right to the school system words and image. So we're working on that, getting better at all those things. So the big answer is God gave you those kids. You'll figure it out, and thank you for having them in, and thanks for tutoring and everything else you do. Life's hard, but God's good. It's all right. Okay, any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Oh, Esolen, E-S-O-L-E-N. Why don't you tell them what you did in your symposium so they know?
Well, you know, read out loud. Sometimes I read it and poetry, or usually, and sometimes just reading random things that I'm interested in. So when you do that, but anyway, now that I do have 2 internal health degree challenge students, and I've got, do you have any tips for?
Like separated with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I would say do Latin as a family, do math as a family, and our new math map will make that easier. And then when it comes to the books, pick which one you think is most enjoyable and make that your family read aloud, and then when you've read part of it, then send them off to read their own literature for that week. It's more just seeing how to, what can I combine? And yet recognizing that, you know, lots of times our middle schoolers aren't that same reading and writing level as our high schoolers, and so we're trying to have some time that's separate for them. That's my one tip. Do as much as you can together, and then do any split off that you feel like you need to do. Then the second one is, I had more of your situation, but not so many children, 2 teenagers and 2 infants. And so what I did is I scheduled 2 2-hour sessions a week with each of my older children. So that would have been 8 hours over the course of a week. And they knew that I was going to be at there and that nothing was going to distract me. And that's when I would give them their individual attention. And I promise you, I never needed 2 hours. Because they knew I was coming. And without fail, they were ready with their questions. And so maybe half an hour would be enough for them to answer a few math problems, help edit a paper, and maybe, you know, show them how to use that truth table in the logic book. But it was, I see that in a lot of homeschooling families, and don't take this wrong, but a lot of them do treat their older children as the babysitters of the family, and so the work doesn't get done. And I understand why you do that, and I think it's a really good idea for your oldest children to be the babysitter of the family. I'm not saying don't do that, because that's what mine were doing too. But then I had to say, all right, if you're going to be doing this for me and that delays you and other things, I have to make that up with some other kind of time to help you to do that. So life's all a compromise in this, isn't it? Like, why do our husbands go to work when our babies are little? Why do they sell Girl Scout cookies during Lent? Like, why do these things happen? Yes, I've been to Antarctica. Is that what you asked me? I've been to Antarctica. Time and money. I took a boat. Good weather. We had a whole week, 6 days of sunny 54 degree weather, so I was on the continent every day. I've kayaked around walruses as well as elephant seals and fished and swam down there. And life's good. Yes, Ray?
I know you're operating in 30 or 50 foreign countries.
Sure. Yeah, and they all need your prayers, because you think what we're going through is hard as Christians, it's worse across the globe. So we're huge in Brazil, Chile, and Argentina. We have an amazing leadership team, and there's already a lot of educational freedom down there. So those countries are growing very fast. And so, but see, the problem for me, I have to translate everything in Spanish and Portuguese. So that's what we're doing now. And then, of course, Canada, they have finally, COVID opened so many eyes to so many people. So we're growing really fast in Canada. And then we're just about to open up, I think, 15 communities in India. We have had communities in India for 30 years, but one here, one there comes and goes. And now we finally have good leadership there. And then Russia, we've had thousands of students in Russia for many years. So those are the big ones. UK, South Africa, most of the English-speaking countries. For us, when we say those countries, we might be in 200 for all I know, but those are the countries where we have committed leaders physically helping other people homeschool. Let me number those. Yes, sir?
Mm-hmm.
How to mentally be prepared? Is that what you said? So were you in Foundations and Essentials? But were you in Foundation? You were. Yeah, just do the same things that you did before. So, for instance, if you're studying Latin, what did you do for Latin in Foundations? You memorized nouns? You memorized endings? You translated? Guess what you're going to do? Same thing. It never changes. When it came to geography, did you memorize a lot of locations and have to identify them on a map by pointing at it? Now you're just going to draw it, right? So just look at what you've already done and just do that next layer. You're older and more mature and have more skills, and just add to a little bit each day to what you already know.
So cycle 3 in India or Brazil, is that their own country?
Yeah, so those don't know, our cycle 3 is very country-centric, and so every country has its own cycle 3 curriculum for the things that are like in the UK, they memorize the kings and queens, said the presidents, things like that. But guess what? Math's the same everywhere. There's one I don't have to correct. Yes?
Do